If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over 1 million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air. It is Wednesday, and it's time for a new episode. How have you been, Dan?
I've been good, thankfully, but I don't feel like aviation has been too good. It's been a bit of a spooky week, hasn't it?
Yeah, for the aviation sector, I mean, globally, it's just been kind of one weird development after the other. And I mean, we're going to look at what has been going on, because you and I have been kind of sharing these developments back and forth, haven't we, across the week, almost, I guess, saving it up for discussing it now, because there has been a lot. A lot of it is in the US, and most of it is unrelated. But if you are just consuming, you know, if you're dipping in and out of aviation news and you're not hanging on to every small development like we are, then a lot of it you will just consider to be a Boeing issue, because Boeing's name is absolutely everywhere. I just read a tweet just now before we came on, Dan, that said, wow, this news cycle literally only has two players right now, Boeing and Kate Middleton. That's it. that's all that's happening.
There is also a presidential election heating up that I feel like is in the news a lot, but maybe Kate Middleton is filling your feed.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other kind of spooky scenario there. We won't dive too much into that rabbit hole either, because I worry that we won't be able to climb back out. Let's start with what is happening in relation to Boeing, but not Boeing itself, but rather an employee. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right?
So I imagine everyone and their mom has seen the tragic news that a former Boeing employee named John Barnett, he worked for the company for 32 years, retired in 2017. He was found dead a few days ago. And the reason, how does this tie into Boeing besides him being a former employee? Well, he was one of the biggest whistleblowers against the company since he quit. He has been calling out Boeing for lacking quality in so many ways. Infamously, the quality of the 787s they're producing has been terrible. They've found scraps inside the fuselage. And what he has alleged, among other things, is that Boeing would literally take faulty parts or parts that don't fit perfectly out of discarded piles and put them back onto aircraft just to meet timelines. So he was a very controversial figure for Boeing. A lot of people, of course, are quite grateful for what he said. Yeah. But what are the updates in the last week, Alex?
Well, as you say, he is known for being a key prominent whistleblower exposing the different areas of Boeing during periods of investigations. And Boeing has faced, as a company, countless investigations over recent years, not least this year. This year, we are only 3 months into 2024. Boeing is facing legal action from left and right. It is quite literally being sued from every corner of each country with a stake or an involvement in either 737 MAX in terms of incidents with the Alaska 737 MAX door blowout, the fuselage blowout that occurred at the beginning of the year, and the passengers who were on board. Boeing is still facing some kind of legal action from the likes of those that suffered way back 10 years ago now with MH370, and of course everything that has happened in between that. That's normal for a huge company, right? Huge companies face legal action for a variety of different incidents, situations, and so on. But this gentleman, John Barnett, has been a key whistleblower more recently in the quality issues at Boeing. And if you remember, it was just a few episodes ago that we were directly quoting the current CEO of Boeing, Dave Calhoun, for mentioning how, or for admitting that Boeing had suffered, quote, quality escape. Anyway, John Barnett had last week been in Charleston for legal interviews linked to a case that he is with Boeing, because he, along with a different load of cases where he's been giving evidence, he has his own legal dispute with Boeing, where he's been ultimately alleging that they are trying to discredit him and ruin his name and so on and so on because of the way he is speaking out over Boeing's quality issues. So he'd been in Charleston for those interviews. He gave a formal deposition in which he was questioned by Boeing lawyers. He was cross-examined. And during this, he had been providing key evidence in the lawsuit against the company, all of it related to Boeing's quality defects, right? So he was supposed to undergo further questioning on Saturday, the 9th of March, last weekend, but he didn't show up in court. Following that, of course, there were questions of his whereabouts, and the hotel where he had been staying in Charleston was contacted, and John Barnett was subsequently found dead in his truck in the hotel parking lot. He never did make it to the rest of those court hearings, the deposition, the further questioning, because he has now sadly died. The Charleston County coroner confirmed the death on Monday, just a couple of days ago, and stated that the cause of death was, quote, self-inflicted, and there was a self-inflicted wound. Boeing issued a statement. They said, quote, "We are saddened by Mr. Barnett's passing, and our thoughts are with his family and friends." And that's all we know at the moment. Understandably, this has gone everywhere because the guy is in the middle of giving evidence of quality defects at Boeing, which is already under investigation in the United States with the Federal Aviation Administration, with the National Transport Safety Bureau, the NTSB, also investigating Boeing on a whole variety of different areas, all affected over quality on the 737 MAX and other aircraft. And now this guy is dead.
Yeah.
The public are wondering if there is something else at play here.
It's one of those moments where you're just like, this can't be happening. The timing is just so crazy. And you know, Boeing is, it's not just any company. We in aviation, of course, we're all like, yeah, you know, it's Boeing and Airbus, we know it, but Boeing is the largest exporter in the entire United States by dollar value. So they are they're an essential company for the entire US, for its economy and its contribution to the world, its position on the world stage. When you literally have a company, or a country like China competing increasingly in the aviation sector as well, for example. So it's quite concerning to see something like this happen. I think, you know, all our minds go to, okay, well, normally, correct me if I'm wrong, any listeners, but I feel like anytime when you say a death is self-inflicted, that generally isn't just announced straight away. I feel like they go, you know, we're going to examine the cause of death to see what it is. So either it's very, very obvious, I guess, that it was self-inflicted. But otherwise, I'm like, why did they just announce it immediately? Obviously, to not lay any suspicion on Boeing, but I think there obviously still is suspicion on Boeing.
Look, nobody likes this, okay? This just doesn't look right, does it? And of course, it could just be a coincidence. And I don't know if we will learn more. It's likely that we may not. And with that, of course, thoughts are of course always with the families and the loved ones, because ultimately they've lost a loved one in this. But Boeing is on the receiving end of scandal. And Dan, it was just the other day that the NTSB publicly confirmed that they were still awaiting key documents from Boeing that they had asked three or four times for that Boeing had not supplied. And that was related to the Alaska incident earlier this year. And it was funny to see the NTSB have to say that again publicly, because they had asked Boeing so many times and Boeing had not passed over those documents that the NTSB resorted to going to the public to let the public know that their investigation was being slowed down by Boeing's lack of, you know, willingness to pass over everything that they had asked for. That it puts again into the spotlight that this is a company that, for whatever different reasons, is having to kind of strategically grapple with multiple crises all occurring at the same time and isn't being the most forthcoming with that. And that's why there is this kind of, Boeing has this cloud at the moment for everything that it's facing. And of course, people are simultaneously looping together anything that now happens with a Boeing aircraft as being part of that Boeing crisis, because so much is happening with Boeing, right? And
yeah,
in that, I don't blame the public. I mean, they don't know, right? So now, unfortunately, when something does happen with a Boeing 737 or a Boeing 777 or even a 767 somewhere, people are like, oh, this is, add it to the list, add it to that list of Boeing crises that's going on, which, you know, isn't always justified. Most of the time, is not linked at all, but because of the way Boeing is becoming a household name with recent negative association, it's just one shit show after the other, you know?
Yeah, and I guess we can talk about another big mysterious piece of news this week, which was that a LATAM 787, so not a 737, 787 flying from Sydney to Auckland. They fly basically a tag on. So it goes South America, I think Chile, right? Chile to New Zealand.
It goes Santiago.
Yeah. To Auckland, to Sydney and back. Yeah. So it was flying its first leg on the return from Sydney to Auckland when literally from 1 second to the next, the plane supposedly goes into free fall. So one passenger describes it as waking up, seeing their seat neighbor on the ceiling of the aircraft, with their back on the ceiling of the aircraft. Some people, or a lot of people, were injured, one person seriously.
Yeah.
But the weird thing about this is that the data from the flight does not show a change in altitude, which makes you wonder what happened.
Yeah, so to put things into context, this was, as you say, a Dreamliner flying on only a 2.5 hour flight. It's that Fifth Freedom route that they are able to take passengers. It's always a great way, actually, to go from Sydney to Auckland. If you want to, you know, just experience something different, you can fly with a Chilean carrier, you know, a carrier from South America rather than Qantas or New Zealand who are doing the route. And the aircraft is at 41,000 feet, as you said, and passengers report that the aircraft started to nosedive just out of nowhere. And that's what sent everyone who wasn't strapped in with seatbelts up onto the ceiling. It's quite, I mean, the report that I was reading after, the not only were passengers injured, the ceiling of the aircraft was badly damaged. There was blood over different parts of the ceiling from where passengers had impacted that ceiling. The seatbelt sign was off. It's not being considered as clear air turbulence or turbulence. Instead, they are reporting that the aircraft suffered a, quote, technical event, a technical problem. And That, I would say, is the most concerning part of all, because we know that clear air turbulence can strike at any time, which is always why it's sensible to have your seatbelts loosely fastened throughout all periods of flight. But on this aircraft, LATAM, the operating carrier, has said that it wasn't clear air turbulence, as far as they know currently, and I don't know how they've been able to determine this so quickly, but they have said that they suffered a technical event. Over 50 passengers injured. This is what I found the most concerning part. The captain of the LATAM aircraft later confirmed that they had briefly lost flight deck instrumentation during the event, during the upset. In aviation, we call it an upset. Basically, you know, something that shouldn't have happened that happens for what's likely to be a cocktail, a contribution of, you know, different reasons. And so the captain said they briefly lost flight deck instrumentation, but it quickly returned. Boeing confirmed that it's working to gather more information and will support the airline LATAM. Boeing shares fell, of course, understandably, on what is another Boeing headline, a negative Boeing headline. And the passengers are absolutely scared, many of them injured. You know, this was, and apparently this wasn't turbulence. So I'm incredibly curious to see what this investigation is going to determine. You and I both look at flight radar data a lot. There is no fluctuation in speed or altitude.
Yeah, which my question is, I'm obviously not an expert on the technical side, but because first of all, even 787s have manual speed and altitude readers, right, as backups. I thought that's always a thing. So those should still be recording to the black box, no?
Yeah, which is why the black box has been seized. And that's New Zealand's Safety Bureau, as well as Australia's Safety Bureau, have said that the investigation itself will be conducted by Chile, because the aircraft is from Chile, and also because the accident occurred over international waters. So had it have occurred over New Zealand or Australia, I think we'd expect them to lead, but they haven't. The Australian Transport Safety Bureau is indicating, as background to those finding out, different stakeholders in the industry, that this accident is linked to the risk of flight systems resetting simultaneously. So let's try and explain this in simple English. This is what Australia seemed to be suggesting as what happened, is that the instruments, basically all those screens and dials in the flight deck, right, in simple English, they need to be reset. The electrical power supplying those systems need to be reset if continuously powered for 22 days, right? So in aviation, you have these memos, they're called airworthiness directives. And in 2016, an airworthiness directive was issued and it said, quote, "We are adopting a new airworthiness directive for all 787-8 and -9 aircraft. And this AD requires repetitive cycling of either the airplane electrical power or the power to the main three flight control modules," basically the main screens, I'm trying to explain it as simple English as possible, the main instruments, "because it was reported that if they were continuously powered for 22 days without being reset, and if you've ever spoken to a pilot, there's a lot in the flight deck that needs to be reset over a period of time, sometimes 7 days, 22 days. It's a bit like how, you know, when your iPhone is playing up and you think, you know what, it just needs a good old hard reset, volume up, volume down, lock button, right? And it just fixes it. Aircraft need that as well from time to time. You just have to turn the whole thing off and back on again. Basically, I'm paraphrasing and simplifying this to the max here, but that's what I mean.
To the max, to the 737
max. To the 737 max, leave that on the shelf. Okay, so it said that after 22 days, there was a risk where everything could simultaneously turn off, basically. And it could simultaneously reset if that reset hadn't been happened manually while on the ground. And so they issued that airworthiness directive to address the unsafe risk of it resetting mid-flight. Is that what happened here? We don't know. That's what the Australian investigation, which hasn't even started, seems to have indicated on background. We will only know once Chile release the preliminary investigation and we go from there. Either way, this was not a good thing. I mean, the fact that we've got a 787 losing instruments, albeit briefly, and reportedly, and of course we believe these passengers, they're all saying the same thing, the passengers and the crew, entering some kind of brief, rapid descent. Others called it a nosedive. I mean, this is scary stuff.
Yeah, it is. I think that we should just remind everyone that the 787 is a safe plane. Aviation is incredibly safe. It's just that, you know, we see incidents like this, it freaks you out a bit, but ultimately the 787, despite all the problems people talk about, has been flying for well over a decade now, never had a serious incident. So,
and also, you know, it's easy also to paint Boeing with the same brush now that, you know, someone would listen to this and say to me, was this a Boeing? Oh, you see, it just further solidifies my case against them. No, it's a coincidence, okay? It's likely to be a coincidence, almost certainly going to be a coincidence. The fact is, as Dan said, aircraft are operating all over the world. The vast majority of them are Airbus and Boeing. They have the duopoly. They are the two main manufacturers. And, you know, when you've got in excess of 12,000 flights per day, every day globally, you know, there are going to be small hiccups here and there. Thankfully, in aviation, they're incredibly rare because we've got the safest form of transport. But we're also going to discuss what is happening when it happens so that the industry learns from it.
Yes, very interesting. You know who doesn't have to worry much about any incidents? Lufthansa passengers flying from Munich today. Yesterday, it was Frankfurt. Today, it is Munich. Lufthansa is on strike again, just after going on strike at the end of last week. So this is like their new thing. You know, they're on strike more than they fly in the past 7 days.
Yeah, I wouldn't be booking Lufthansa over this next month if I had a choice, because these strikes are announced last minute with maximum impact, right?
Luckily, it's not happening during the summer. That would be horrible. I remember a few years ago, I had several people I knew, including my aunt and uncle, who were flying Lufthansa to go on vacation in, like, I don't know, June or July, I guess 2022 maybe. Lufthansa had a big strike then. And their flight, I mean, everyone was so screwed over. And it's one thing, now we're in like one of the slowest periods for travel during the year. But in June and July, it is not easy to find a backup plan. And I mean, so many people have their plans ruined. It's really bad.
It always would strike me, oh, there we go, no pun intended. It would strike me as interesting how normal operations can be the day after a strike, because sometimes when a strike ultimately eliminates the entire schedule, the next day is absolutely smooth sailing. Like, it's everything is there is no evidence of there being chaos the day before. And I say that because I have flown twice the day after a Lufthansa strike and the passengers who were affected the day before were like trying to get onto the flight that I had already booked, and they were not given the priority. They were left to deal with it. But if you were one of the lucky ones, and in that scenario I was, where I had booked just by coincidence the day that was the day that followed the strike, goodness, I think we left the gate 5 minutes ahead of schedule. It was, you know, and the crew were in a good mood and everything. And I was just thinking, God, there's no evidence here of the fact that yesterday was utter carnage and today is smooth sailing.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I have a friend who flew from Gothenburg to, I think, Toronto on Monday. So she just squeezed her flights between the strikes. So she was flying Lufthansa, Gothenburg, Frankfurt, Frankfurt, London, and then London, Montreal, Montreal, Toronto. I was like, honestly,
there has got to have been a better way to do that.
Yeah, but I was like, honestly, it would have been better for her if she was flying on a strike day. She could like get Lufthansa to rebook her direct to Toronto from Copenhagen or something. Yeah. We could have avoided all that.
Have you been to Montreal? No, I asked you this before.
Yeah, and I've been there for like one day in 2010 or 2012 or something. So it's been a while.
It's always interesting to see the carriers that operate to like Montreal and Toronto, because there's such a mixture in terms of, you've got like, you know, it just doesn't feel very American. It almost feels more European. It's just full of Air France outside and Air Transat and, you know, and Air Canada Rogue. I mean Rouge. and all these, you know, basically it's just, you really see that historic link between France and Canada.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Anytime I'm checking flights across the Atlantic, one of the first routes I check for like premium cabin award space is Paris to Montreal, because there's so many flights, even in the middle of the summer. This is quite a good inside trick for everyone. Like, if you need transatlantic space, that's like the last one to dry up, in my experience. So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Little tip.
That's interesting. And some of the pricing, though, can be really whack on that route. I remember finding tickets that had award space by error, but if I was going to pay cash one way, $10,000 London Montreal. It's like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
you know what I was thinking of recently, who's been really, really quiet? Singapore Airlines. I feel like I have not seen anything from them in months.
Yeah, as we've said, they don't say a word unless they have to, unless there's something big. Taylor Swift was taking over Singapore. I feel like they could have done something fun with that, but I didn't see anything. So
Singapore, yeah. The state actually paid, didn't they, to ensure that other Southeast Asian nations wouldn't benefit from having a Taylor Swift concert. Did you see that?
I read something about that. That's crazy. I mean, I do wonder where else she would have gone. Maybe Bangkok, but I can't see her going anywhere else. But
did you know, it's funny because it's just, I mean, these have become global events now. One artist does one concert and I see the immediate aviation impact. I started to get notes through different kind of servers that I have set up that monitor. I mean, that sounds really shady, doesn't it? Servers that I've set up. But basically, I get pings to my emails. There you go. That's a more...
Okay, that sounds kind of extremely boomer, but okay.
I get pings to my emails that will show me where excess capacity or additional capacity is being added to routes that wouldn't otherwise have it. And it basically points out the key hotspots of the aviation world. And it's usually because of, I mean, for example, it's currently Ramadan, Ramadan Kareem to all of those observing their holy month. And I can see on a map through the system that there is a lot of increased traffic, for example, positioning to Mecca, Saudi Arabia. Of course, you flew there recently, didn't you? And you've got a great YouTube video showing that amazing 747. I watched that the other night. I was like, this guy, honestly, the length he'll go to for a click on YouTube. I'm impressed. no, but I'm serious. It was a great video.
So you're calling Mecca a click on YouTube, all right?
No, you are. Okay, so don't twist it to me. Thank you. Anyway, the traffic to Singapore for the Taylor Swift concert, crazy. I mean, it was, aircraft were oversold by percentages that they had never seen over the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years. It was, it's just amazing how one concert now is a global event that ultimately dictates air travel for that day and the day before, the day after, and so on and so on.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you guys, I mean, I'm going to two Taylor Swift concerts this summer. So we'll talk more about the flights and what I found for those, but it's been pretty interesting.
You can launch a new podcast for that and you don't need me to be there for that. You can just host it and talk about your concert.
Speaking of celebrities, it is interesting because, like, for example, take Kylie Minogue, who I think still lives in Australia, a very famous singer for those who don't know. But I feel like everything she does is in the US or the UK. So I was wondering, like, yeah, she's rich, but she's obviously not like Taylor Swift level rich. So how does she fly if she's going all the way to London? I assume she goes in Qantas first class on the A380 via Singapore or, direct to LA in Qantas first class. That's how I would guess. But then I checked the ticket prices and it's like, $18,000 round trip for Qantas first class from Sydney to LA.
Sorry, I need to better understand what was happening in your head at this time. So set the scene for me. You're at home and you're wondering how Kylie Minogue moves around the world, right? And so then you open your laptop, you open Google, you start Google checking the ticket prices that she might be paying. Then you see the prices and you're like, my God, it's Kylie Minogue. So how much free time do you have?
You know, while I'm watching Love is Blind, this is the type of thing I will also do.
I know. I don't even know what that is.
If you're not watching Love is Blind, you're missing out. It is.
What is it?
I don't watch a lot of reality TV, but this, it's on Netflix. I can't believe you don't even know what it is. It is the most entertaining reality show, and it's not the difference, like, compared to many other shows. I feel like some seasons have relatively classy people. So it's not like you're just watching it horrified. It's quite interesting. Basically, people date in pods so they can't see each other. And then they have to decide to get engaged without ever having seen each other. And after that, they have like 4 weeks.
Yeah, I think we're done with this explanation. Okay.
Anyway, right. So Love is Blind, checking Kylie Minogue flights. So, okay, I mean, yeah, $18,000, I'm sure she can afford it, but I'm like, hello, take my course, Points Master, I'll teach you how to get it much cheaper, Kylie, hit me up.
Well, consider this an open, desperate invitation from one of the co-hosts on this podcast, and his name doesn't begin with an A. So we, what's funny is there is another, okay, well, so while you were watching Love is Blind, I was reading the Financial Times, and I was reading that is exactly what I do in my free time. Unfortunately, that's true. I was reading the FT, where they had put together this chart that I found really interesting, specifically for younger travelers, right? When I say younger travelers, I don't just mean kids. I mean people our age as well. Let's say like below 35, okay? And they put together this nice chart that shows the up-to-date cost and duration of journeys in Europe comparing train with plane, right? Mm. And, I mean, one quick glance at this and you only have to realize why those EasyJet flights, for example, from Amsterdam to Berlin or Paris to Geneva are full and the trains not necessarily as full or as profitable and so on, despite being the more sustainable option with fewer emissions and so on. The difference on some of these, I mean, is just staggering. For example, Barcelona, the route between Barcelona and Paris, flight, €65, less than 2 hours. Train, €200 and around 6 hours.
That's insane. But what does this have to do with Kylie Minogue? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I know it has nothing to do with Kylie Minogue. No, but that, I mean, listen, I'm spending the week with Oscar's mom. For anyone who doesn't know who Oscar is, just check my YouTube channel, Oscar and Dan. And while you're at it, you know, go check my course. This is so bizarre.
Oh
anyway.
What am I going to advertise on my podcast? What do they collect? You can follow me, guys, on Instagram. Imagine.
No, so I'm spending the week with her. And I mean, she's very Swedish for better or for worse. I love her. Yeah. Nothing bad about that. But Sweden,
why is it
is,
that when you said she's very Swedish, in my head I saw Greta Thunberg?
I mean, yeah, speaking of Greta Thunberg, that's the thing. Like, very Swedish people are pretty much all such flight shamers. I mean, I don't want to say still, because of course aviation is still a problem in terms of emissions. But I feel like that was like a huge thing 4 years back, 5 years back. But Swedish people are still very hardcore at that. So, you know, I often have to have these discussions and explain things that, you know, for example, aviation, yes, it's a huge problem, but we're talking about 3% of global emissions. We're not talking about something even like animal agriculture, which is in the, you know, dozens of percentages. So
meat and dairy, about 30%. Fast fashion, about 25%.
Yeah.
You know, it's so sexy in the media speak to slam aviation. And aviation should be held to account for its 3%. But that's why I was bringing up this chart, because it just demonstrated again, you know, this is why. This is, if they want people to, for example, if they don't want people to fly from London to Paris, it's 50, again, this chart shows, €50 on average to fly, €128 on average to get the train. Now, you ask 9 out of 10 people, we know what they're going to choose. It's going to come down to the fare, right?
Yeah, and the time. I mean, even if you're price sensitive, I don't think you're going to spend like, you know, 10 hours on a train when you could take a 1 hour flight in some places, even if the train was like 20 euros cheaper. I doubt most people would do that, but
yeah,
I don't know.
And I think it's just time. Like in the European Union specifically, you know, policymakers need to acknowledge the fact that the public popularity, if you like, of, you know, low cost flying and cheaper airfares will continue to trump any climate aspiration unless we had, you know, better rail infrastructure, that the, you know, it was cheaper and so on and so on. Aviation ultimately remains an enabler. So why not work with a solution in terms of sustainable aviation fuel and all the different measures we've spoken about before, then continue to target it? And this is why I linked it with Kylie Minogue's thing, because even celebrities are on the receiving end, as we've spoken about, of, you know, being flight shamed because they have flown somewhere and people were tracking celebrity jets and so on and so on. And all of that was born, of course, out of the Swedish concept of flight shaming, which in Swedish is called what?
Flygskam. Flyg is flights, skam.
Which Greta became kind of the poster child for that movement, didn't she?
Yep, she did. Thanks,
Greta. Is she from Gothenburg?
No, she's from Stockholm. And funnily enough, her mom is a very famous opera singer in Sweden.
Wow.
Which adds some strange context to Greta Thunberg.
Does her mom fly, do you think?
Yeah, actually, I'm sure she does. Because, I think Greta might have forced her to, like, take the train to some places in Europe for, like, 20-hour rides. But
yeah,
I do think that her mom flies sometimes. But, of course, as we know, it's hard to always convince our parents to do what we do or what we think is sensible.
Yeah. The other development in terms of frequent flying, this links us nicely, is that Finnair have adopted Avios, which is quite exciting, right?
Yeah, as a... Okay, we both love Finnair. So to us, it's great news because we have... So basically, let's give some context to everyone. Most airlines have a loyalty program with their own currency, and it has nothing to do with other airlines. There's a few exceptions, but the biggest exception is IAG, so International Airlines Group. British Airways, Iberia, Aer Lingus, Vueling are part of this for now. So all of these airlines share the same points currency, Avios. That makes sense. It's the same owner. You know, Air France, KLM share a points currency. So there you have that. But it was very kind of a plot twist when a couple of years ago, Qatar Airways suddenly announced, we're switching from our completely owned currency to Avios. All right, that was interesting. Meant you could transfer points from your British Airways account to your Qatar Airways account and vice versa. The redemption costs, at least between British Airways and Qatar Airways, were synced. So you pay the exact same amount pretty much redeeming for a Qatar Airways flight via British Airways and vice versa. Now Finnair is the latest airline. And what makes this different is that Finnair has no stake. It has nothing to do with IAG. Qatar Airways owns a stake in IAG, but Finnair is just there like, hey, you know, we're partners in the transatlantic joint venture, but that's it. Yeah. And now they're doing this, which in my eyes is good news for most people because it gives you more options for, you know, where you want to earn status versus where you want to redeem your points. For example, since you can transfer those points between programs, for example, it's very easy to earn status with British Airways, but maybe you want to redeem through Finnair. So now that's an option.
And greater flexibility in the kind of these tie-ups are ultimately good news for the consumer. With Finnair, I'm really pleased that they made a profit. I think it's amazing given the circumstances of Russian airspace being totally off limits and the way in which their business model fell apart overnight. They have been able to make a profit over the last year. And I was pleased to be able to congratulate the now former, but only just recently now former CEO of Finnair, Topi Manner. He came to Doha for a holiday with his family last week, and I managed to see him while he was here. Yeah, he comes to Doha usually during the winter for some winter sun with his family. I think the February half term, things like that. I think last time he came maybe October, and I saw Topi while he was in Qatar, just briefly, and I congratulated him on the fact that they were able to turn a profit in perhaps some of the most difficult circumstances ever. Now, Toppy Manor, shortly after I'd seen him, has now left Finnair. That was planned. There was a 6-month period or so whereby he was finalizing things up at the carrier and has now joined a telecommunications company in Helsinki. I believe he worked there multiple decades, a couple of decades ago, I think he said on his LinkedIn post. But I really like him, and I think it's what he's done is pretty commendable stuff at Finnair, and to turn a profit in those conditions, I think deserves credit. And he was a cool CEO. Everyone around him seemed to really perceive him well. And when I spoke with him about the profits, he said to me, well, it's down to a variety of different deals, including, you know, different strategic commitments, including the strategic commitment we had taken with Qatar Airways, he said to me, because they were able to enter that agreement whereby, you know, Qatar needed aircraft because of the fleet shortage. And at the time, the Airbus dispute, Finnair had excess capacity because of the way in which Russian airspace closure ultimately eliminated half of their business plan. And so, you know, Finnair, they were sharing the route. They continue to share the route now. And he said it's through those kind of deals that they were able to get business smart in the face of something extraordinary like the war in Ukraine. So it was a nice brief
chat.
That's
great.
It was good to hear. And I'm also pleased that they managed to stay profitable, or to rather turn a profit given the circumstance.
Absolutely. You know, what you just said ties in very well to a Q&A question. We have many Q&A questions, so do you want to jump into that?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, so jumping off what you were saying about Finnair flying to Doha, Ron asks, why are all these airlines suddenly launching flights to Doha? Now that Qatar Airways doesn't have the problems with the A350 anymore, shouldn't they want to expand again rather than outsourcing different routes?
I think Qatar Airways has been pretty open about how it is leveraging its partnerships across the One World Alliance, and that has been the strategic direction. It's to boost the number of passengers that are transiting or connecting onto QR flights by leveraging those relationships and having the One World carriers fly here. And now flying to Doha, we have Japan Airlines, Iberia are flying here, Finnair, of course. You have a whole bunch of existing One World carriers that were already operating, such as Royal Air Maroc, Sri Lankan. Who am I missing?
I mean, there's more, but we also have, I mean, what's random to me is we have Garuda Indonesia, Southern, we have several SkyTeam airlines also flying to Doha.
Remember that Qatar Airways has a small stake in China Southern.
Yeah.
So that's that.
Yeah. But I know the Guangzhou to Doha expansion, for example, from China Southern, that represents an increase in capacity. But for many of these, you know, the Garuda flight, Iberia, American, actually most of them, it's replacing a Qatar Airways flight, which to me doesn't make sense, because I'm like, at least during the blockade, their whole thing was, we want to fly to as many places as possible. We want, you know, they should want people to be on their aircraft. And there's a reason people are choosing to book a ticket with Qatar Airways that has at least one segment with them connecting somewhere. So I feel like no one is happy about that being like, oh, by the way, your flight has been changed to Garuda Indonesia. So what the only people benefiting, I feel, are perhaps the airlines starting the new flights. But I personally don't see how Qatar Airways is benefiting from that, besides having more aircraft unlocked to fly elsewhere.
Well, that's the main benefit, which is that it enables growth at QR in terms of destinations, and then being able to boost frequencies elsewhere while leveraging those partnerships by having trusted partner airlines like, for example, BA and American fly some of those routes on their behalf, where they're still able to obtain some element of profit from that flight, be it through the servicing or the profit sharing if it's a JV, or if it's the way in which they invest in IAG and so on and so on. Or the way that they can increase passenger numbers and traffic and flow onto connecting QR flights by having those passengers fly here with those carriers in the first place. So I get what you mean. You're basically suggesting, you know, you're right, that the majority of passengers, I mean, the majority won't know, but there is a lot of them that will have expected that both segments will be operated by QR. But at the moment, I think because of the way in which they have a fleet shortage here, which they are quite transparent about, I mean, they're just short of aircraft and they have a huge network. The only way at the moment to grow is to be able to loop in the partners and free up some aircraft, which then allows them to add a destination or two and so on and so on.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. I have another question. For some reason, recently when I'm saving the questions, I don't get the name all the time, so I'm really sorry, but they say, "Hi, Dan, love your channel and the podcast with Alex. I live in Indonesia and it's something, well, I guess the podcast is something I look forward to on my Thursday morning commute. I wonder if either of you guys have ever considered getting your pilot's license."
That's a fun one. Interesting question. You go.
Well, I have a bit of a story, so if you have a more simple one, then you go ahead.
Well, my answer is absolutely yes. Okay, that was, you know, a consideration. I didn't go the whole way to PPL just because I've always loved the industry so much, like the wider industry rather than just flying, that my time at that time was spent on work and commitments more focused on industry rather than flying itself. But I have taken flying lessons. I have flown before and I did love it, but I do love the industry more. So that's why, because if anyone had known me, for example, in primary school, okay, I wanted to be a pilot. That was my thing. Mm-hmm. Alex wants to be a pilot. He's obsessed with aviation. He wants to be a pilot. Then I would say in high school, it started to transition slightly from only narrowing in on the flight deck and the act of piloting the aircraft to the industry and the airline, the commercial air travel sector itself. And so, yeah. That's my answer there. Interesting. What about you? I'm interested because I do not know. Go on.
Yeah, I never knew about your story either, but I was never really that interested in general aviation. So my thinking was always like, if I'm going to have a pilot's license, I want to fly a 747 or like a 737. I don't need to be flying around in a Cessna. But I also had never flown, you know, any general aviation aircraft. So in 2021, when Oscar and I were in Switzerland, our viewer, Hans Peter, who I cannot believe he offered us this, but I guess he saw we were in Switzerland and DM'd us saying, I'm a pilot or a flying instructor in Switzerland. I would love to take you on a flight on my Cessna 182. So we were like, yeah, let's do it. So we went to see him and we got to fly in his Cessna. I got to fly the plane, not take off and land, but I got to fly in flight. And to me, that was just like, it unlocked this world I'd never experienced and wasn't really as familiar with at all as with commercial aviation. So from that moment onward, I was like, yeah, I want my PPL. And I'm still waiting for the moment when I feel like I have time to commit to that.
Time. Yeah.
And I feel like that's the problem for so many people. The cost is, of course, another huge thing. But it's like time and cost, because I would love to have a pilot's license, but can I justify spending all that money for something that I might use not very often for fun, basically? That's how I view it.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. I've got a question here from Dan, not you.
Oh.
And he says, "Hi, Dan and Alex. I really love the podcast and I actually wish your episodes were twice weekly because the week seems to take long to come back around." It's very kind. He says, "My question is, have either of you ever flown Ryanair? I hear so much flying stories of premium airlines, but not so much about airlines like Ryanair, of which I am a frequent flyer. Thank you very much for the podcast."
Wow. Well, congrats on being Ryanair no status, because they don't give you status, those cheapos. I've flown Ryanair a lot. Okay, I'm checking my flight radar. I mean, it's not a lot, but in, I guess, since 2009, when I started tracking my flights, I've taken 26 flights on Ryanair. So it's a decent amount. I think far more than you.
I think I've taken 2.6.
Minus 2.6. 2.6 minus 2.6.
No. I've flown with them a few times. Yeah. I've flown with them a few times. I've flown EasyJet hundreds of times. Maybe over 1,000 times.
There's no way. No. I haven't even taken 1,000 flights in my life.
No. Let me try and calculate this. No. Okay, that was excessive. Hold on. Let me try and calculate something that makes sense. I can't believe I just said that.
Even if you flew round trip every week.
No. Okay.
Then that's 100 flights a year. So it'd have to be.
Okay. I think I've done about 300 EasyJet flights.
Okay, that's wow. Yeah. And I've only done 26.
Maybe it just feels like 1,000 because 300 feel like one.
That's crazy.
But not Ryanair. Only a few times on Ryanair, to be honest.
Why do we not talk about it? Like, I just feel like it's not. Why do we? You know, we could discuss Ryanair. We do. Actually, I do feel like we discussed Ryanair.
No, we have. We've spoken about Ryanair quite a bit and O'Leary. We have. Yeah. We have. And
it's just that we don't.
We don't share recent travel stories. Yeah, exactly. I mean, God. Here's an airline that I've flown that's low cost, and I absolutely hated the experience. The two flights, they've now gone bust, so there's no risk of upsetting anyone. But they were from your part of the world. They were Primera. Do you remember Primera?
Yeah, but barely. Yeah, I never flew them.
Yeah, well, mabruk. But anyway, I flew them, and imagine this, right? I was flying back for something really urgent with work, and it was a bit of a stressful assignment. I can't remember what it was. I just remember I felt, you know, a lot of pressure with this thing that was happening. And the only flight, because it was in summer, every flight that was sold out from Malaga to London, the only flight that was available was with Primera. They had no online check-in. They're about 2 months old in terms of their base in the UK. And it was operated on a 737 flying to Stansted. Shudder. Anyway, and imagine this. So it was an evening flight to London. It was fine. Like, it was all right. I mean, I didn't love it, but anyway. Coming back was a 6:50 a.m., you know, early morning, low-cost, midsummer flight on a Friday. And when I got on, and it was serious. I'd been there in London for a serious reason, and it was really early in the morning, and I just wanted to kind of sit down, be discreet, put my earphones in and sleep. The cabin crew got on the PA and she was like, okay, everybody ready to party? Yes. I was disgusted, right? Because I was on that aircraft and I was not there to party. It was a commercial flight, not some holiday charter, right? Oh, and she was like, everyone, I know you're excited because we party when we get there. She said, but she went on to explain about how we will be doing 2 or 3 drink service. So make sure you have the credit cards available because they will not accept cash. And if you don't have cash, then borrow your friend's card and blah, blah, blah. This was all before takeoff. I was in the window seat. I remember I said to the couple next to me, excuse me, sorry, I just need to get up. Yeah, got up, left seat. Walked to the front, closed the curtain behind me, said to her, hi, are you the, whatever the equivalent on this aircraft is of the CSD, like the bursar, are you the one in charge? She was like, yes. I said to her,
you said,
can I just, please.
When does the party start?
I'm like, could you point me to the onboard library because I'm in the wrong place? I said to her, I hope this doesn't come across rude, but this is a commercial flight of which passengers from all walks of life and for a variety of different reasons have been sold tickets. We are not all on here to party. So while you may be accommodating the 1 or 2 stag or hen nights that are on this aircraft, the rest of us are not interested in being addressed as a whole, as if we're all part of one group. Yeah. Okay. So I said, I found your PA to be completely disrespectful, and all it will do is encourage rowdy behavior that could lead to, you know, all the reason why the UK has an air rage issue in summer is because half the aircraft is drunk and intoxicated, and then it ends up something like 10 flights a summer are escorted by military in a diversion to offload some aggressive lunatune because the airline got him drunk. I said, you know, that is not what I'm on board for and what we've signed up for. And you are encouraging such an eventuality. So I ask you, please, to treat this as a normal flight. She was like, yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
You were like, okay, I am the captain now.
I'm the captain now. No. I think I was expecting her to push back. And I think she just like had her, she was just awake to this reality. She was like, yes, sorry. And I was like, okay, all right. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Because she's probably, if this was actual Primera Air Nordic and she was used to flying with Scandinavians, no one would ever object like you did. So I think that was quite sobering for her to be like, oh, people don't like this. Okay.
She did the longest PR in the beginning that was encouraging rowdiness and partying and addressing everyone. It didn't cross her mind that there was like an 80-year-old couple, God bless them, about two rows behind me, that was sat there thinking, what have that adult son and daughter booked them on? You know, and I couldn't believe, of all people, I ended up on that as well.
Yeah.
It was, that's bad. Oh my God, just close my eyes, put my AirPods in at the time, and just waited for it to be... To be over. So there you go. You didn't get Ryanair a story out of me, but you did get a Primera one, but they've now gone bust. What a shame. Anyway.
I guess we should, I mean, okay, the reason I haven't flown Ryanair since 2022. Wow, it's been so long. Not really. But the reason I don't fly them anymore is it's actually the most ridiculous thing. It's just that my carry-on, which I always bring with wheels, is 2 centimeters too long and I don't want problems.
He's too big for Ryanair. Yeah.
So I don't want problems. I'm like, all right, I'll pay double for British Airways just because my carry-on is 2 centimeters too big.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, it's a valid reason.
For some reason, people think I'm like Ryanair hotspot. I get, especially my friends' parents always text me, hey, Dan, like, I'm flying to Edinburgh on Ryanair this summer. My suitcase is 1 centimeter too wide. Should I risk it? And I'm just like, I don't know what to say, because first of all, I don't like to risk it with Ryanair. But second of all, I can't give them the advice that they should risk it and then get, you know, charged 50 euros.
Yeah.
So I just tell them, if I were you, I would just check it in to be on the safe side, because...
Yeah,
I don't know.
Low-cost carriers, hey. Well, I've got a question here from Helen. She says, hi, Alex. My question is just this. I like it when a lot of the listeners write, here's my question. You know, she's, but my question is just this. What the, insert F word, has happened with United over the last month? In brackets, she's put maintenance or just freak coincidence? Thank you. Okay, Helen, I prepared for this. I've written it down in my notes. Okay. I have no idea as to what is going on with United and the string of incidents that they've been facing, all minor, thankfully, but nonetheless incidents, over the last month. And in case you're not across this, here is what has gone down. On February 6th, a United 737 MAX flying from the Bahamas to Newark with 155 on board landed, and during the rollout, the rudder pedals were stuck in a neutral position. The captain maintained directional control via the steering tiller, which is basically usually used for when the aircraft is taxiing, and there was no further incident. But now the NTSB, that's the safety bureau in the US, is having to investigate how United suffered these stuck rudder pedals on landing. On March 4th, a United 757 flying from Honolulu to San Francisco was en route at 33,000 feet when the crew declared an emergency, reporting that the right-hand engine was shut down. The aircraft descended and continued a safe landing. On March 4th, the same day, a United 737-900 flying from Houston to Florida with 167 on board was climbing at around 12,000 feet when the crew stopped the climb because the left-hand engine emitted a series of loud bangs and flames. The crew advised air traffic control that they had suffered what's known in the industry as an engine stall, but the engine had still been kept running. The aircraft landed safely back at Houston's runway about 35 minutes after takeoff 2 days later on March 7th, a United 777 flying from San Francisco to Osaka was climbing out of the main runway 28 right on San Francisco Airport. After becoming airborne, it put up the landing gear. The aft inboard wheel of the left main landing gear separated from the gear strut, fell onto the ground. In simple English, a wheel flew off. An entire part making up that landing gear flew off, fell onto the ground. The aircraft retracted its gear, climbed 32,000 feet, then started its proceedings to begin an emergency diversion back to Los Angeles. On March 8th, a United Airbus A320 flying from San Francisco to Mexico with 105 on board was at 37,000 feet in Mexican airspace when the crew decided to turn around and go back to LA, reporting a hydraulic failure. On March 8th, the same day, a United 737 MAX was flying from Memphis to Houston. It landed, it slowed to a speed of about 30 knots, and just before attempting to turn right off of the runway onto the last taxiway, it skidded and went straight. After turning 45 degrees, came to a stop on the grass with its left gear collapsing, pitching the aircraft up into the air, the passengers having to evacuate. If you check my Twitter, when I saw this development, I tweeted saying, don't be a Max, don't be a Max, don't be a Max. It was a Max. On March 9th, a United A320 flying from Chicago to Salt Lake City with 149 on board was en route at 34,000 feet. It was just near to Chicago when the crew decided to turn around and return to Chicago due to an oil warning indication. The aircraft did make a safe landing, and now the FAA is having to investigate. And on March 11th, yesterday, a United Boeing 777 performing a flight from Sydney to San Francisco was also in the initial climb out of Sydney's runway 34 left. Retracted the gear, but fluid leaked out of the right hand main gear. It was a hydraulic leak, and the aircraft completed the gear up, leveled off over the Pacific, and then decided to come back to Sydney. The flight was cancelled, and the aircraft is still on the ground as we speak now. I have no idea why United have had all of these issues in the last 4 weeks alone, but they are all there documented in a database. And by the way, this database that I have access to, I can see almost all airlines in the world and what they are documenting. And for some reason, United's name is there about 10 times in the space of 4 weeks. Helen, I have no idea why. We'll ask United for you. We'll get back to you.
Yeah. Or maybe we should ask Kylie Minogue. Maybe she knows. Maybe that's a good way to round up the episode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, we still have quite a few questions. We'll get to them next week, and I've got many in my DMs. So for those that have DM'd me, Miriam, Pedro, Marco, Yusuf, we'll get to your questions. Thank you for submitting them. You can submit any of your other questions, as usual, to either of us via Instagram. I'm Alex, LHR. Don't ask. I'm stuck with the username. It's the story in episode one. And Dan is Nonstop Dan because he...
Well, I'm Nonstop Dan.
If there's another one.
Someone took that name before I even changed to it in 2018.
Yeah, someone the good people at Lufthansa, because if you just remember, their slogan globally was Nonstop You, and that's where Dan, who was a Lufthansa fanboy back in the day, took that slogan and made it his brand, Nonstop Dan. So you learn something new every day, and today you learned that.
That's not it. But on that note, we'll see you next week on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.